Mental illness is epidemic in America, and the problem is spreading worldwide. It's time for decisive action, because the battle for the mind is part of a much larger war being waged between good and evil, with you as the prize. Welcome to Simple Solutions with Christian psychiatrist and author Dr. Timothy Jennings. For the next hour, we'll uncover Bible-based weapons for fighting destructive feelings and resolving inner conflicts. Dr. Jennings wants to arm you with the tools necessary for achieving emotional and mental stability as you strengthen your relationship with God. We'll open the phone lines for your questions in just a moment. I'm your Simple Solutions host, Charles Mills. And welcome to the program. So glad you tuned in. Today's topic is a tough one, but we believe it must be discussed because of statistics like these. 1 in 6 women will be a victim of sexual assault in their lifetime. 1 in 6. Every 2 minutes, someone in the U.S. is sexually assaulted. Rape is something that can't be ignored. It can't be set aside for another day. It can't be swept under the rug in hopes that it'll go away. And if you think that sexual abuse takes place between strangers, think again. Here are 2 more pieces of information we need to consider. Approximately 73% of rape victims know their assailants, and only 6% of rapists will ever spend a day in jail. Let's talk with Dr. Timothy Jennings about what happens to the human mind when the body is violated through sexual assault. Dr. Jennings, what are some of the psychological motivations that can transform a family friend into a sexual enemy?
You know, it's an interesting question, because the way you phrase that, family friend into a sexual enemy, not all sexual assault is motivated from the same reason. There are multiple reasons why. One is power, and seeking power and control over somebody else rather than sexual gratification. Other reasons include the perversity of the own individual who gets aroused in inappropriate situations, like an adult male aroused with little children. And then sometimes it happens because, it could be an adolescent getting involved and things get going too far, and one tries to back out and the other one has no self-control and won't back out. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it can be because of alcohol and drugs involved in the mix.
Yeah.
So not every assault is the same thing.
You know, you used the word power at the very beginning of that description, and I have to think the way that God created true love and the expression of love has really nothing to do with power. How did we introduce power into what everybody thinks is the love reaction to someone that you love?
Yeah, I don't think this is a love reaction at all. We're talking about rape and sexual assault, and I don't think anybody thinks rape and sexual assault is a love reaction.
Okay.
So, we're not introducing power into the love reaction. Unfortunately, we can talk about relationships which do have power and control and authority, which aren't sexual assault, and some people consider that love, and that is a distortion and a perversion of what genuine love is. Mm-hmm. But when we're talking about rape and sexual assault, we're not talking about love, and I don't think anybody, even the rapist, believes it's love.
Because a lot of them will simply say it is. They'll say, I love you, I love you, I want to be with you, I want to do this with you, and she says, no, no, no. And he, in the name of love, is doing this, but you're saying that he is mistaken. This has nothing to do with love.
It has nothing to do with love in a situation like that. There could be delusions. Okay, so there could be somebody who's delusional, and they're delusional. This is the object of love. It's an erotomania.
Yeah.
But that's the rare exception. Okay. From my understanding of the causes of sexual assault. That can be a reason, but the guy isn't, it's not love. He's delusional. But most of the time, it's not about love. It's about power. It's about personal gratification. It's about venting some anger or rage or some issue along those lines.
When this happens, of course, we have to not look at just that event. As a psychiatrist, I'm sure that you are seeing this is one of the dominoes that falls in a long line of dominoes. What, in your experience, have you uncovered that indicates that somewhere down the road, this person could potentially become a rapist in their youth or childhood, in their growing up?
You know, I think people who have lost the capacity for empathy, lost the capacity to care about other people, Those people are vulnerable to become people who will exploit others, whether it's sexual exploitation or whether it's other types of exploitation. When we lose the capacity to feel what others feel, to care about other people, then the other people aren't people anymore. They're objects there for our gratification, our exploitation. So I would be looking for signs of lack of empathy or inability to empathize with other people.
Now, for those parents who are listening and who have children growing up, are you talking about if a child mistreats an animal, if a child is very selfish, self-centered, is that what you're talking about?
Those are signs that would be red flags that we'd be very
really?
Concerned about, particularly cruelty to animals. And cruelty to animals is not the same thing as somebody who grows up in a family in the South or the Midwest, where the family hunts and fishes.
Mm-hmm.
Hunting and fishing is not the same thing as cruelty to animals. Cruelty to animals is where you take family pets or neighbors' pets and you actually torture them and kill them, and you get pleasure out of seeing them suffer. That's
okay.
What we're talking about. Yeah.
Oh, boy. Well, as this child grows and begins to show these types of reactions to the world around them, what other red flags begin to fly as the years roll by that a parent can see as an indication that something is not on track here?
Well, lack of remorse for any wrongdoing, we would watch for. There's the remorse that one got caught, remorse mm-hmm. that one has lost some privilege or some opportunity or some resource that they valued, some freedom or some autonomy. There's remorse for the loss of something they valued, but not remorse of the act itself.
Mm.
So we would watch for that. You watch for a child or adolescent who can take advantage of other people and even laugh about it, giggle, brag about it, think it's a cool thing to do, and they're only remorseful when some negative consequence comes to them. That would be a really big, big sign, because that's showing there's no capacity to feel the pain of the other person. They can't get in tune with how their ugly behavior is actually hurting another person. They actually get a power trip off of that type of exploitation. That would be a huge red flag.
Is this kind of behavior learned? A child is, you can have two kids growing up in the same family. One becomes a rapist and one doesn't. Everything's the same. Is this something that's hardwired into someone?
Well, everything is not the same. I think that would be a huge assumption.
Mm.
The way I consider it would be, if you think about the mental faculties of the capacity to empathize and be aware of the feelings of others and care about others, if you consider those capacities as something that most people have, and we would make that analogous, say, to the capacity to see, vision. Now, children can be born blind.
Yes.
Yes. They can also be born with good eyesight and then have something traumatic happen to them that takes their vision from them. The same thing, I think, can happen. There are people, I think, for various reasons, that can be born with neurological deficits that make it very hard for them to have empathy and compassion or connect with other people. And or they can be in circumstances that cause such trauma to them that it alters the normal development and robs from them that capacity. So I don't think we could just nail it down as one or the other. I think either is possible.
Well, very good. We have a break coming up in just a couple of minutes here, but I want to start this discussion before we go. If a mom or dad notices a child with a lack of empathy, hurts animals, tortures animals, and that lack of remorse for the actual event as opposed to just the fact that he got caught, what can a mom or dad do to try to derail what is going to be potentially a very dangerous person?
Yeah, I think they have to first look at what's going on in the home.
Hmm.
Much of the time, the kids are responding to things that they're learning in their environment. I won't say 100%, but that would be the first place to look. I mean, that's where the money, it is.
Yeah.
So you'd want to look at the home. What's going on in our home? Are we bringing to our children the influences that will reduce self-centeredness and the desire to exploit others? And are we bringing to them influences that will strengthen those neural circuits of empathy and compassion and other-centeredness? There are certain things that are damaging, and for kids that are vulnerable, not all kids are as vulnerable as other kids. And so certain activities will have a more detrimental effect on certain kids than they will on other kids.
Well, we are going to find out what some of those activities may be, and we're going to learn a little bit more about what causes that violence behind closed doors. Surviving rape is our topic today. We'll be back with Dr. Timothy Jennings in just a moment, so don't go away.
Here's Dr. James Markham with your daily heartbeat.
There are many ways that we can change our body's chemistry. The Bible is full of wonderful prescriptions that are often better than some of the medications we might take. One of the best prescriptions out there is that prescription of rest. God knew that our body needed rest. In Genesis, he worked 6 days. What did the God of the universe do? He rested. He also designed our body to take advantage of these circadian rhythms to rest at night. When we rest at night and take a weekly rest, the body renews itself. The tissue is restored and feels better. Now just think about it. If you broke your arm, would you keep using your arm? No, you'd rest it. If you ate bad food and you were throwing up, would you eat more? No, you would rest. So rest is a very valuable treatment to help our body's chemistry.
If you'd like more information, go to heartwiseministries.org. That's heartwiseministries.org.
Do you always feel close to God? Hi, this is Jeremy Woodruff, and one morning my daughter Elizabeth and I were making breakfast and packing school lunches as the sun was coming up over the ridge behind our house in a dazzling East Tennessee sunrise. Ellie and I commented on how beautiful it was and how close God seemed at that moment. But it was hardly 30 minutes later as we were driving to school looking straight at that same brilliant sun that Ellie commented,
"It's not beautiful anymore, it's painful now."
And as I pondered that profound contrast, I began to wonder why at times God seems so intimately close and other times so glaringly painful. If you've ever asked questions like this, wondering how to reconcile these seemingly opposing attributes of our loving God, please call 800-775-4673 and ask for the free Discover Bible lessons. I believe they will deepen your understanding of God. Call 800-775-HOPE and ask for Discover.
Welcome back to the program. We want to open our phone lines right now at 800-775-4673. During that two-minute break, ladies and gentlemen, someone in the U.S. was raped. That's why we're talking about this right now. Every 2 minutes, someone is raped in this country, and Dr. Jennings is here to help us understand a little bit of the psychology behind the act, and also we'll be talking on the second half of the program of how to survive it, how to rebuild life after that has happened. Dr. Jennings, we are talking about what it takes to build a rapist. We're talking in general terms, of course. The lack of empathy, the lack of remorse in the child growing up can lead to this. The home is important as a breeding ground for this kind of activity and also a breeding ground for keeping this activity from happening. What are some of the influences, Dr. Jennings, in a home that can lead to or nurture that type of activity or can reverse it?
In order to understand the influences, we need to first understand the underlying roots neurologically and psychologically. Rape and exploitation of others always happens because of a selfishness in the heart of the person doing the evil deed and a lack of empathy, compassion, or love for other people, where you're willing to take advantage of another in order to somehow gratify yourself, whether it's the gratification of experienced power, which can give you a sense of euphoria and thrill, or it's a sexual gratification. Either one, it's a willingness to hurt another person to promote yourself in some way. That is the root of it, and that is called selfishness. Well, we are born into this world of sin with hearts and minds. It says in Psalm 51, born in sin, conceived in iniquity. We're wired with a predisposition towards self-centeredness. A psychiatrist called this egocentrism, ego, the self, centered. Mm-hmm. So self-centered. We're all born this way because of Adam's sin. This is why we have to be reborn, born mm-hmm. with the ability to care about others more than ourselves. Neurologically speaking, the emotional centers, the deep brain centers called the limbic system, are where we experience this self-centered drives from. And it's out of the prefrontal cortex, an area called the anterior cingulate cortex, where we experience compassion, love, altruism, other-centeredness. Now, activities parents have as a primary goal to raise children in a home where they can experience love, so those prefrontal cortex circuits grow strong, and they learn the capacity to calm and suppress those negative self-centered circuits. And we know that when the anterior cingulate cortex fires, desires. And I'll just have the audience think about this. I want everybody in the in our listening audience to think about a time when you were experiencing a moment of true love, a moment where you were really in tune with the deep connectedness with another person. You really cared deeply about that person more than you cared about yourself. At that moment, did you experience any fear? Notice the fear circuits, which are the self-centered circuits of our brain, get suppressed when we're in love. Yeah. And love, perfect love, casts out all fear, the Bible says. So we want to do things in the home that will strengthen those love circuits. One is obviously providing, first and foremost, being loving parents.
Yeah.
Okay, loving parents aren't marshmallow parents, but they're parents who care so much about their kids, they're going to do what's best for those kids, even if the kids don't like it. So it means parents who will set proper boundaries, parents who will enforce proper rules, set discipline, let the kids cry if the kids need to cry in order to provide for the child what the child needs. Simple example, providing vaccines for your kids, even though the kids may cry while they're getting them and it hurts them, the goal isn't to hurt them, it's to protect them, and we'll do that even if the kid doesn't like it or understand. That's what love does what's right. So with that in mind, then we understand the various influences and how they affect the developing brain. One of the things we know now in science is very strong that television watching of theatrical programming, regardless of rating, whether it's G-rated, PG-rated, PG-13 rated, R-rated, if it's theatrical in nature, the cartoons, all the animated things that kids watch, inflames the limbic system where we experience those impulses, those drives, those passions, those insecurities, those fears, and paralyzes the prefrontal cortex where we experience love, empathy, and compassion for others. Wow. So the more television watching kids do during the developmental years, the more hypertrophied those limbic system circuits get and the less developed those prefrontal cortex circuits get. And so they have less capacity for love, for empathy, for other-centeredness, and they have less capacity for self-restraint. And so it's just one factor that for a vulnerable kid who's vulnerable for other reasons could push them in a direction where they're less caring about other people. The number one factor probably, though, that science would say that contributes to a child growing up to be able to take advantage and exploit others would be growing up in a home in which there's abuse, where the parents are not loving parents, where the parents either abuse the kids or abuse each other. A child growing up in a home where daddy beats mommy is very, very likely to grow up to abuse women, because that's the roles that he's seen, or a home in which he or his siblings are abused by the parents, it inflames those fear circuits. Watch out for number one, protect yourself, and hardens the heart, where we don't open the heart to care about people because the two people that we've cared about the most have exploited us and taken advantage of us, and life isn't safe and nobody deserves to be cared about.
In other words, just like watching television, if you're watching it in real, if you're watching your dad and your mom go at it, it's like watching television. There's actually something developing or not developing in your brain at that time.
It's much worse than watching television if you're watching the family. Yeah. Way down. Multi-factors times worse. Because in television, while there is this activation of the limbic system and you will get these stress hormones and you will vicariously get that experience, and anybody who's watched a really intense movie, for those in the audience who've watched the movie Saving Private Ryan, which is a true story about World War II, the beach scene, the Normandy landing, everybody I've ever talked to who saw that, their hands were trembling as they were watching it. Yeah. What was happening? If you were taking blood pressure, heart rate, and stress hormone levels, the people watching it were having this huge physiological reaction because of the stress of this movie. That's an example of what I'm talking about here. But it is much more severe when you're in the room when it's happening. As bad as it was watching it in theater, if you were on the beach there when it's happening, multi-times more stressful.
Yes.
It's not even in the same stratosphere. Same thing happens when you're in the home in which this type of abuse is going on. It's more stressful. And it's more stressful when the two people you're watching it happen to be your parents, the two people who are supposed to provide safety and security to you. This then extrapolates out to your whole psychological world. The whole world now becomes an unsafe place. It's very devastating for kids to be at home with abusive parents.
My. So we're talking an actual physical change in the brain in those two regions right there, which begs the question, Doctor.
More than that, if I can interrupt.
Sure.
Those two brain regions do get altered. Neural circuitry, neural development alters. Hypertrophy of those impulsive regions, less development of the prefrontal cortex where we reason, think, organize, plan, self-restraint. But we've also recently documented that kids who grew up in abusive homes have alteration in their DNA expression.
Oh, my goodness.
Genes get turned off, genes get turned on. So the DNA is the DNA. they have. But now, because of the abuse they were raised in, certain genes get what's called methyl caps on them and shuts them off. And this makes them more vulnerable to mood disorders, to depression, and to suicide later in life. And they wouldn't have had this DNA expression change if they wouldn't have been in an environment of abuse.
But isn't the DNA transferred to the next generation?
It is. And the DNA is transferred. And what we're discovering is that oftentimes the DNA expression is also transferred. Not just the DNA, but how the DNA is being expressed is often transferred as well.
Oh, my. How important it is as parents to raise those kids where the scenes that they see are one of love and one of peace and not of fear, to develop the prefrontal cortex, right? Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah. And this gives us insight into why the Bible says unto the third and fourth generations these things pass down. Many people misunderstand reading the commandment because it says it in the affirmative, God taking responsibility. I will punish to the third and fourth generations, and they think God is inflicting something. Well, God is the designer of our human body. He's the designer of how we reproduce. And so ultimately, this is all operating within the context of his design template. So because God designed it, he is so ultimately responsible for the design and how things work. But what he's saying here is that when you live wickedly and sinful lives, you not only damage yourselves, you damage your children, and you alter the DNA expression, and that altered DNA gets passed on to your kids three and four generations down.
My, that is incredible. Our phone lines are open at 800-775-4673. If you have a question or comment on today's topic, we'd love to talk to you. 800-775-4673.
Let me give a little good news.
Sure. Okay. We need some.
The good news for those listening is if you were raised in a home like that and you've had a lot of negative experiences and you work in God's plan and therapy to overcome some of those things, and you've actually taken your life, which is on this very negative trail, and you've experienced transformation where you actually have freed yourself from the bitterness, the guilt, the anger, the resentment, and you've actually experienced a healthy love relationship, that also alters DNA expression, and you will pass advantages along to your kids as you gain victories in your life.
Boy, when God says, I will give you a new heart, he's talking about a new mind there as well, isn't he?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
My. Well, we've spent the first part of the program talking about some of the red flags that may appear in a home as a child is growing up that could lead down the road to that child becoming a rapist. On the second half of the program, I want to talk about the victims of rape and what they can do to try to turn things around in their lives, surviving rape. And we'll be doing that. Before we go to our break, I want to remind our listeners that we do have a website that you can visit. And you actually have a presentation on the recovering of sexual abuse. Is that right, Dr. Jennings?
I do, absolutely.
Okay. That website is www.comeandreason.com. www.comeandreason.com. Come and Reason, all one word, like they do on the internet. Comeandreason.com. Why Come and Reason? Where did that come from, Doctor?
Isaiah 1, where it says, come, let us reason together, that your sins are like scarlet, they'll be white like snow, though they're red like crimson, they'll be made like wool. Uh-huh. The idea is that God wants people who will actually turn on their brains, think and reason with him, because this battle between Christ and Satan is a battle for your mind. Satan is the father of lies. Christ said the truth will set you free. The only way you can be set free is if you actually take the time to reason things out with God, to come to a true knowledge and personal experience with the truth.
Yeah.
That can't happen if you let other people do your thinking for you. So my goal, and I say this on my website, is not to tell people what to think. My goal is to get people to think.
To think,
and
yes.
Examine the evidence for themselves. And as Paul says in Romans 14, every person must be fully persuaded in their own mind. So come and reason. Come and learn how to think.
All right. www.comeandreason.com is the website for that. Also, you can learn about some other resources that Dr. Jennings is making available to us. Could It Be This Simple is the name of an amazing little book, The Biblical Model for the Healing of the Mind. This has been out for a couple of years, and it is causing quite a stir. Also, Healing the Mind with Dr. Timothy Jennings. This is a 6-part DVD seminar. My wife and I sat and watched this one weekend, and we're tremendously blessed by it. So I invite you to visit his website, www.comeandreason.com. All right, we'll take a short break. When we come back, more on surviving rape. Our phone lines are open, 800-775-4673. That's 800-775-4673. Stay right where you are.
Summer is a popular time of the year for family reunions. Sunny days, hot dogs, and stories of how things were back when Grandma was young. It also means greeting complete strangers your mom says are related to you. Some family reunions are a real pleasure to attend. Others are awkward, especially if there has been animosity between family members. I know there will be some exciting reunions this summer as members of our armed forces begin returning home from the Middle East. What joyful celebrations there will be. But the greatest reunion by far will be when our Heavenly Father calls His children home. No one is sure when it is coming, but the signs say it could be very soon. Think of the gathering that will be, meeting up with friends and loved ones who have died years ago. To make certain you'll be at this reunion, you must be a member of the family of God. When Jesus died on the cross, He canceled your sin debt and mine and made a way for us to be adopted in His family. From Life Talk Radio.
In 1941, the USO was born to honor and comfort the men and women of our armed forces around the world. Men and women who have put our dreams and our futures above their own, who protect and defend the freedoms we hold so dear. And burning in every one of their hearts is a singular, undeniable desire to come home, to return to the ones they love, to realize their dreams, to be free and at peace. And so the USO will carry on to touch their spirits, to comfort them, to remind them, to simply and heartfully thank them for the extraordinary gift they give us all. Wherever and whenever they go, until every brow is soothed and every hand is held, until every song is sung and every battle won, until everyone comes home. To find out more about the USO, visit us at uso.org.
Jesus said in John 14:27, "Peace I leave with you. My peace I give you. Do not let your hearts be troubled and do not be afraid." Do you long for that peace in your life? Let's return to Simple Solutions with Christian psychiatrist and author Dr. Timothy Jennings. Welcome back to the program. Today's topic is a tough one, but it needs to be talked about. 1 in 6 women will be a victim of sexual assault in their lifetime. Dr. Jennings, that is an incredible statistic. And I'm beginning to understand where rapists come from listening to you in the first half of the program. Now let's talk about the victims of rape, people who have had this awful thing happen to them. What are you finding as you talk to these people? What are you finding is the greatest roadblock that is keeping them from moving on beyond the event?
Well, I want to answer that question, but I also want to clarify a couple things on the statistics.
Yes.
1 in 6, that's U.S., right?
Yes.
That's not worldwide.
Right, U.S.
I think worldwide, that's going to be even more.
Ooh.
I think you're going to find that the in third world countries, in some of the other countries of the world, that women and see the sexual assault and rape in some countries, they don't count it if it happens in the context of the marriage, but husbands
right.
can also sexually assault and rape their wives,
yeah.
And much less frequently, but it does happen. And we should just mention it for completeness' sake that men are also victims,
yeah.
And boys are also victims of sexual assault and sexual abuse as well.
Yeah, the statistic on the men is 1 in 33 men.
And what about boys?
Doesn't have the college age women are 4 times more likely to be sexually assaulted than those that are older.
Yeah.
So this is a tough subject. Okay, 800-775-4673 is our phone number. Our phone lines are open now for your questions and comments on this topic. Okay, let's get back to that question. What is the greatest barrier that you have found? Let's say a woman who has been sexually assaulted. She can't get past it, Dr. Jennings. She can't move on. She doesn't want to open the door to her apartment, to her house. She doesn't want to live. She doesn't want to go beyond the moment. What is keeping her there?
Usually there's a couple of factors that go hand in hand. Ultimately, it is how this experience has changed her perception of herself and her perception of the world around her. She hasn't been able to take this experience and incorporate it into an understanding of her life history that she can have peace with. She's not at peace with this. She wants to reverse history, wants to undo it, wants to erase it. There's been a change in the very fabric of her internal world landscape.
Sure, sure.
And this doesn't fit in. And so it's an aberration that is so traumatizing that it disrupts the entire internal world. And so part of the process is helping the young lady to come to an understanding of these events that she can look back on and live with.
Yeah, yeah. And how do you lead someone into doing that?
Well, there's a lot of reasons.
I would think this would be like the worst thing. Here's someone whose very body has been violated, the very existence has been violated. This is something that is, I can't think of anything worse.
Well, there's a couple of distortions that are fairly common that happen in this, and I deal with a lot of people who've been victimized, and it does depend on when in your life cycle you were victimized. The consequences are different if you're victimized at age 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 10 than when you're victimized at 30. Okay, they're not the same consequence. It also depends on who's the person who victimizes you. It's a different consequence if it's your mother or father doing this than if it's a stranger that did this. So while we're talking about these in very general terms,
yes,
how it is experienced by the person is ultimately the key, and that's the relevant thing, how it's experienced. For instance, and I give this example sometimes, not everything that is actually sexual assault is necessarily traumatizing to the victim. Mm. Example: there is a form of sexual perversion. It's called paraphilias. Paraphilia is the things that are the psychiatric term for sexual deviations or deviance. And one of them is called frauderism. Frauderism is somebody who actually would go into public places that are very crowded, like subways and elevators, and bump into the rear ends of people on purpose and gather sexual gratification from that. Okay. Everybody that is bumped is a victim.
Yeah.
Okay. But most people are not traumatized by that, because most of the time they're unaware that they've just been sexually assaulted.
Yes.
Okay, so it's not the fact that you were sexually assaulted necessarily. It's what you know about what happened to you. Another example would be if somebody puts you under anesthesia, and while you're under anesthesia, assaulted you, and maybe right after the assault, you were on your way for a hysterectomy, and you had your hysterectomy, and you woke up, and you were very sore because of the hysterectomy, and that's all you thought happened to you. There would be no trauma, psychological trauma, for quite some time. But what happens if 10 years later, 10 years have gone by since that event, and there was a security camera that caught that whole assault, and that was shown to you 10 years later, and now you become aware of the event? Now the trauma, psychological trauma, begins. So it's not just the trauma itself, but how the trauma is internalized. Mm-hmm. Another example. Mm-hmm. You take a whip and beat one person, they're traumatized. You take a whip and beat another person, and they're gratified.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So it's not the event itself. It's how the event is experienced that... Now, with all that being said, there are some events that are clearly abusive and clearly traumatizing and clearly wrong. Mm-hmm. And clearly known. And so how do we deal with that? Well, when those things happen, a father, a mother sexually assaulting their young child, it's always wrong. It's always bad, okay?
Yes.
And it's going to have devastating consequences. Or an adult person who's raped. How do we deal with that? What's the underlying roots that keep people trapped there for years? Well, many of my patients struggle with feeling in the aftermath of this. They come to experience themselves as ugly, as gross, as dirty, as nasty, as disgusting, as, in other words, some change in the self has happened where they don't feel pristine, pure, happy with themselves. They're not comfortable with who they are anymore. They feel like they are now different. And one of the things we have to help them realize is, and what happens is, this experience itself was ugly, nasty, traumatizing, disgusting, gross. But the experience is not them. And see, what happens is the experience gets translated and attached to the self, and they come to experience themselves that way. So I give this kind of crude metaphor. Imagine walking out in the cow pasture, and you slip and fall on a cow pie. Now, that would be a gross experience.
Yes, it would. Yes,
okay? It would be kind of disgusting.
Actually, I've done that.
Yeah, and it would be disgusting. Maybe
yes,
maybe got in your face even.
Yes.
Okay? But even though that experience is gross and disgusting, that doesn't make you a gross and disgusting human being. Okay? Yeah. We can have gross and disgusting things happen to us, but that doesn't make us gross and disgusting people. And that's a huge distinction victims of assault need to get right in their head. Because what happens is the event feels so gross and disgusting, and those emotions are true. We're not telling them not to have those feelings, yeah. But those emotions need to be attached to the experience. That was a gross and disgusting thing I went through, but I'm not.
Wow.
And until they can get that right, they really can't move on because they loathe themselves. They feel gross. They don't feel worthy. They don't put themselves out there in relationships the same anymore because they don't feel like they're worth anything anymore. And so you may need to make that distinction. In therapy, you help the person work through that and realize, yes, that was a horrible, gross, disgusting thing that happened, mm-hmm. but you never were. Do you see the difference?
Yes, I certainly do. Yeah.
Yes. And so that's one example. And the other big thing that often holds people back is holding to resentment, bitterness, anger, rage, desire to make that person pay.
Yeah. And I would imagine that would be very, very, very strong in some people. And you have talked on this show about forgiveness. Let's cut to the chase here. Is it possible? Is it actually possible for a victim of rape to forgive the rapist?
Absolutely.
Is it essential that they do that? Is it necessary for recovery?
So you added that little last qualifier. Yes. They can't. You can't ultimately get well if you don't forgive the person.
Really?
Now, we have to understand the purpose of forgiveness. If you in your heart forgive a person, then we don't have to talk about rape here. Let's just talk about any wrong that's done to you. Somebody's beaten you up. Somebody's maligned you with gossip and got you fired from your job. Somebody has cheated on you. Your spouse has cheated on you with somebody else. I mean, there's all types of harm that happens to us in this world.
Yeah.
If you forgive whoever's done you wrong in your heart, does that change the person who did you wrong?
No.
Does it change you?
Yes.
Notice the primary purpose of forgiving other people is so that the person who's been victimized can heal.
Wow.
Holding to bitterness, resentment, and anger in our heart, does that punish the person who victimized us? Does it cause them any pain? Does it keep them up at night? Does it make them suffer? No. But does it keep us living in the moment of pain for the rest of our life until we forgive? The only way we can let go and move forward is to forgive the person in our heart. And then we actually move forward in healing ourselves. Another way to look at this is when people do us wrong, when the people do us evil, they plant a seed of evil in our own hearts.
Yeah.
And if we retain bitterness, then over the course of time, our hearts begin to harden. We become angry. We become bitter. We become resentful. We become hard-hearted. And ultimately, if we don't forgive, we become in heart like the person who did us wrong.
Oh.
That's the insidiousness of how it spreads.
Right.
And one of the weapons we have to root that out is forgiveness, the only weapon that God has given us. And the tool of forgiveness prevents us from being infected with this evil seed that would harden our hearts toward other people. Well, let me give you a quick metaphor,
yeah,
if I can.
Sure.
I want you to imagine you've gone, and why it's so important to forgive. I want you to imagine that you've gone down to the beach in Miami, and you've laid out on the beach at 10 o'clock in the morning, fell asleep, didn't wake up till 4, and you had no sunscreen.
Oh.
And you've got this terrible, terrible sunburn.
I would do it.
And you're sitting there with just a white t-shirt on, and your five-year-old kid comes and jumps on your back. What do you do?
You scream.
And you yank them off.
Yes.
Do you do that because you don't like playing with your kids? No, because it hurts. How about your spouse comes home and doesn't know you've got a sunburn, and they come up and give you a big bear hug. What do you do? Okay.
You pull away fast,
because it hurts.
Yes.
Okay, not because you don't like bear hugs. And if somebody slaps you on the back on purpose, okay, you get mad and angry. The point of the metaphor is when you are sunburned, you lose the ability to tell the difference between touches of love, touches of play, and touches of aggression. Everything hurts. And people who have been injured and don't forgive, they have emotional sunburned hearts, and they get hurt all over the place, all the time, the rest of their life, even when people are playing, even when people are trying to be loving, they get hurt and they pull back. Now, if you had that real sunburn, is the best strategy to try to figure out a way that no one ever touches your sunburn again so you don't get hurt, or to heal the sunburn? What's the best strategy? Unfortunately, when people have been victims of assault, they're hurt in their heart. They've been burned. They don't trust. They're afraid. And instead of actually healing the sunburn of the heart, they spend their life trying to put up barriers so no one ever gets close to them again.
Bye. 800-775-4673 is our phone number, 800-775-4673. If you have a question or comment on this very important topic for today, we'd like to hear from you, 800-775-4673. Dr. Zings, when we come back, I have to ask this question because I feel that there are listeners right now who have it on the tips of their tongues. What do you do with the feelings of revenge? This person came and violated you. This person has destroyed your life, your ability to love. You are dealing with a hurt that goes so deep you can't stand it. And that person is scot-free. That person's wandering around, probably doing it to other people. You want to stop him. You want that person to pay. How on earth do you deal with those kinds of feelings? More with Dr. Zings when we return, so stay right where you are.
Too many Christians don't know the truth about dinosaurs, but Christian scientist Dr. Elaine Graham Kennedy is out to change that. Dr. Kennedy is a research scientist who has done field work at dig sites in remote places like Patagonia. She has spent her life studying dinosaurs, and now she has published a remarkable book called Dinosaurs, published by Pacific Press, that is both scientifically based and biblically sound. It answers the questions many Christians ask. Did dinosaurs really live? Are dinosaur bones fake? Who made the dinosaurs? What happened to them? And were dinosaurs on Noah's Ark? Dr. Kennedy's book, Dinosaurs, is filled with interesting facts, photographs, and colorful charts. It is a must for every Christian home and perfect for reading with your kids. To get a copy, visit www.pacificpress.com or call 1-800-765-6955.
I had no idea my daughter was taking drugs.
I started smoking pot when I was 14.
At 15, I was on the streets doing whatever I had to do.
My parents never really knew where I was. They thought they did.
Whatever it was he was doing, he didn't want me to know. He didn't want anybody in the family to know.
I already did alcohol and I already knew what pot was about, so why not do cocaine?
I started smoking crack at 15. I took LSD 2-3 times a week.
When my family found out I was on drugs, they were just horrified.
He was not raised to be brought home in handcuffs.
And I remember my mother saying to me, "You're going to die if you don't get help." I wanted to have my family back. And that's when my mother found Narcanon.
If you or someone you love has a drug or alcohol problem, call Narcanon today at 1-800-468-6933 or visit us at www.stopaddiction.com.
Welcome back to the program. Our phone lines are open at 800-775-4673. We're talking about violence behind closed doors, surviving rape. Dr. Jennings, those feelings of absolute revenge. You don't want that guy to get away with it. How do you deal with that in your heart?
When you read the question prior to the break, you not only said feelings of revenge, you don't want the guy to get away with it. You also said something about you want to, maybe he's out there still doing this to other people and you want to stop it.
Right.
Now, those are two different things.
Hmm.
They really are. The feelings of revenge, and we'll talk about those, is that desire just to make him pay. That I don't want him to do it to other people is actually an altruistic desire to want to protect others from harm. They're not the same motivation at all.
Hmm.
Sometimes they get blurred in this, but they're not. Let's talk first about the feelings of revenge. And one of the reasons people have this, and this is one of the obstacles to forgiveness. And in my book, I talk about the seven myths to forgiveness. And one of those is this idea that if I forgive, they get away with it.
Right.
They haven't been put in jail. No one's held them accountable on earth. If I forgive, they're going to get away with it. And so this myth says, I'm going to hold them accountable. Well, first off, they have to see the reality that you holding them accountable in your heart and holding to that bitterness only punishes you. It doesn't punish them, number one. Secondly, though, it's based on a lie that the person gets away with it. You see, the reality of the way God's constructed his universe is when we perpetrate evil upon another person, we never get away with it because we damage ourselves, damage our reason, sear our conscience, warp our character, take ourselves further and further out of harmony with God and make us more and more debased in person. And let me give you an example. This is what I say to my patients. I ask them a question. When you were molested, when you were raped, who got damaged worse, you or the man who raped you?
That would be tough.
Well, they always answer me.
Yeah.
I say, okay, I understand that. Let me give you this scenario. Imagine God just took you to heaven right now, or in vision took you to heaven and says, I'm going to send you back to earth, and you've got one choice between two options. Option number one, you get to go back to earth exactly where your life is today. You're the same person. Nothing has changed. The history of your life is exactly as it's always been. That's option one.
In other words, you're a victim of rape when you come back.
Exactly. Okay. Same thing. Nothing's changed.
Okay.
Option two, I will let you trade lives with your rapist. And you get to go around and either molest kids or rape women or rape whoever, but you yourself won't be a victim of rape. Whose life do you choose? 100% of my patients choose their own.
Yes.
And I say, why? And that's when the light goes on. They realize, whoa, if I do that to somebody else, while when I was victimized, my body got hurt, my emotions got hurt, my psychology got hurt, my conscience remained clear, my soul remained unsullied. But if I were to do that to somebody else, whoa, something much more precious than my physical body gets damaged.
Wow.
And see, when we recognize that, then we can let it go, and we can say, I don't have to hold them accountable because they're paying for it already. And some people say, but they're not losing any sleep over it. And that just goes to show how badly damaged are they already? How far debased are they already? You see? So the idea to hold somebody accountable for the purpose of vengeance isn't needed. But there is a place where it is healthy and reasonable to seek out the proper agencies to bring that person to account, both for the protection of other future victims and for the redemption of that person himself by being called to account, by being put in jail. It stops him from the pattern of destructive behavior and gives at least an opportunity to reevaluate and rethink and see if whether there's a place for repentance. And many of them will never repent.
Yeah.
But that holding accountable is an opportunity for that.
Well, Dr. Jennings, we have someone on the line who would like to talk to you. This is Anne from Ontario. Anne, what's on your heart today?
Hello, Dr. Jennings.
Hello.
I've been raped three times, but not three times, but by three different husbands. And the first time that happened, I just couldn't believe it. It was, how could this happen to me? Why would he do this to me? You know, I thought he loved me. And with that marriage, it took me many years to get over, to be able to trust. Then I had another marriage many years later, and it took me a long time to build up confidence again, but friends encouraged me into this relationship, and it seemed that this man truly loved me. But week after we got married, the abuse started, the rape started. It had a stranglehold on me, pull my hair. It was horrendous. I would come downstairs afterwards and with my Bible and cuddle up to my dogs and just cry out to Jesus, help me. This went on for 10 months. And I could no longer bear it anymore. You know, I couldn't take any more abuse. And I found out that I was married to a pedophile. The Lord guided me to a cabinet that I'd never been to because it didn't belong to me, it belonged to my husband. And I found this crime file. And I found that I was married to a pedophile. And a year later, after getting some help, I found that pedophiles will take out the frustration on their wives, anyone close to them, because they can't get to a child. And I felt dirty, sick. It was horrendous beyond belief.
Well, Anne, your story certainly is a heartbreaking story. Dr. Jennings, what would you do? What would you say to Anne? She says she felt dirty, and I guess I can't blame her. She felt awful about this. How can she start her road back?
Yeah, this is a heartbreaking situation, and I think if I heard you right, you said this happened three times. Mm-hmm. So three times.
Three different husbands.
Three different husbands, yeah. Yes. First off, I want to. One of the things that's helpful is that we begin to not just hear the tragic story, but we didn't begin to dissect it with the truth. And the truth is, all of these men are responsible for their actions, for their decision to not love, but to exploit, to dominate, to control, to abuse, to mistreat. They're responsible for those actions and the way they treated you. You're not responsible for their behavior. But it does. It is an opportunity, though, for you to ask a question. It's a very important question, I think, that you might want to spend some time, maybe even counseling, looking at. And that is, what's going on in my selection process that I would choose three times men that are so deviant, so destructive, so hateful in their heart that they would treat me this way? What am I missing? What is it that I'm not seeing in the dating process that would be helpful for me to see so that I could prevent choosing guys like this to be with? Again, it's not your fault they treated you this way. They are responsible for their misdeeds and misbehavior. But I think the history would suggest that there is something that's not being perceived or picked up or recognized that you might want to avail yourself of and say, what am I missing, so that maybe you could avoid any type of relations like this in the future.
You're not saying in any way that it's her fault at all.
I wasn't saying that at all. Not at all. They're responsible for their behavior.
Yeah.
When you see this happening over and over again in multiple different relationships, there is something that's being missed in because I would suggest that three different men being involved with in this way, there's something in her selection and the way she sees these men that she found something about them attractive that maybe a lot of other people wouldn't have found attractive.
Yeah. Well, Anne, we hope that you have some ammunition now from this program and from what Dr. Jennings has said to try to face the future. I know it's going to be tough, but God is there to help you, as you know, Anne. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. Over the years, I've learned to forgive.
Well, good for you.
Jesus is now my husband.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Well, Anne, thank you so much for calling. We appreciate that, and we'll think of you in our prayers. Okay, Anne?
Thank you.
Thank you. God bless you, too. You know, Dr. Jennings, I know it must hurt your heart from time to time to listen to these stories, to listen to these people, but you have good news for them. You have a way for them to come back from this, and that's the good news of what you're trying to put out in the world. Isn't that right, Dr. Jennings?
Absolutely, and I would suggest that Anne go to the website, comeandreason.com, and find our lecture there on recovering from sexual abuse. Mm-hmm. It's a free MP3 file. She can download it. She can listen online, and I think she'll find a lot of things there that could help her.
All right. Well, very good. And again, that website is www.comeandreason.com. www.comeandreason.com. Well, Dr. Jennings, thank you so much for another wonderful, insightful show. And listeners, we are so glad that you join us week after week. Until next week, this is Charles Mills with Dr. Timothy Jennings, inviting you to apply the simple solutions God placed in your heart today. God bless. Simple Solutions is a production of Life Talk Radio and Dr. Timothy Jennings and is made possible by your generous support. For more information, visit www.comeandreason.com.